the Chicago Bulls, we rarely talk about the Bulls, and rightfully so. this is an organization and a basketball team that hasn't brought much joy to Chicagoans. I'm not the only one that's getting very excited about what is coming on ESPN, the June reveal of a 10-part documentary on the final season of the Chicago Bulls, the 90s Bulls. That looks amazing, and it also makes me go, yay, oh, to think about where we are in 2020. It's that time of year, the Christmas season, or the Christmas holiday is over, so that means that the official start of the NBA is on, and we don't know if the Bulls are actual contenders or if they're back in the hunt for a ping-pong ball at the NBA draft. Sam Panionovich joins me every year. And this has been one of my favorite segments to do, and we always do it right around Christmas time. Sam Panionovich joins me to talk about the Chicago Bulls. And we've been singing the same song for a couple of years, my friend. Thanks for joining us.
And no problem. I come to you live from Corcoran's Irish Pub at lovely McCarran Airport in Las Vegas. There's nothing like a four-hour layover in Las Vegas when all you're trying to do is get home. But hey, you know, it gets me going talking. I feel like we've had this conversation, yes, man, and we joked about this. I first started coming on your show when I was a reporter there at WGN in 2015. Have we not had the same conversation every year? Are they good enough to win, or yeah, are they going to, like, they haven't gotten any better in the last 5 years?
It's amazing to look back at some of the headlines of the conversations we had. The Bulls are not as championship contenders. Bulls remain confident, but results all that matter. That's 2015. 2016, what's wrong with the Chicago Bulls? 2017, Fred Hoiberg looks overmatched. 2018, it keeps going. It's the same thing. But where are, Sammy, cover basketball. The Chicago Bulls are in, what, year three or four of a rebuild. Are we getting better? I mean, you're starting to see talent, first-round talent, top-10 talent that is kind of circulating throughout the Bulls organization. But are the Bulls getting better?
It's a loaded question. It's a hard one to ask. They've gotten younger, and I think they've gotten more talent across the board. When you look at some of the guys they brought in the drafts, 2019, it's Coby White. 18, Wendell Carter. In 2017, that's when they flipped the pick and got Markkanen and Levine and Chris Dunn. So that was three players for Jimmy Butler. But then we go to 16, it was Denzel Valentine, who didn't really even play this year. And in 2015, it's Bobby Portis. So you got younger and you got talent here. But of those guys that I just rattled off, are any of them superstars? The answer to that question is no. And this is a league since 1979, when you had Bird and Magic come out of college and go to the league, it has been a league that has been predicated on having not one, maybe not even two, but three superstar players on your championship team. And right now, you could make a case looking at the Bulls roster that they have one superstar, maybe. Some nights they have one. And it's not always Levine, it's not always Markkanen. And the problem is you don't have an alpha that you can rely on every single game to win them a close game. And they're still losing to the Hawks and the Knicks and the Hornets. They lost to the Warriors at home. And the Warriors are starting Justin Coffin, Pete Zimmerman, and Bob Surratt. You know, I mean, it's like you can't beat that team. And now you have a head coach. We talked a couple years ago. I thought Fred Hoiberg was delusional. They lost a 28-point lead last month. And Jim Boylan stands up there in front of the media and says, well, I thought we fought hard. No, dude, you stopped fighting, and you lost a 28-point lead. So I don't know that there's ever been accountability in the last decade. It's always the head coach's fault. But now this coach can go out there and say what he wants and have a bunch of bad losses, but he's not even being held accountable. So I just continue to scratch my head.
Yeah. Well, let's go through the tiers. Let's start with the general manager, Gar Foreman, and John Paxson, who seem to be untouchable, although we've heard more about possible changes with Gar Foreman. But this is a squad that has been there for a decade almost. It's this idea that they're in charge of the rebuild. Have they done a significant amount of work to get us to this position, or is it time for Jerry Reinsdorf to look a hard look in the mirror and say, I got to get new leadership here?
He should, but he won't, and that's really the problem. You can look at the White Sox with Kenny Williams. Kenny Williams has been there because he won a World Series. John Paxson will have a job for life because he hit a shot in 93 that won them the championship. It's almost like mafia-esque, right? Like we take care of our own, and you appreciate the loyalty. But I'm telling you what, when you look at where they picked in the draft, if you're going to tank and your objective is going into a season that we're going to be as bad as we can, so we can pick first, second, or third, that's the goal. When you want to be that bad, you want to pick at the top of the draft. when you land 777 3 years in a row, you couldn't even tank right. Like, you're not even trying to win, and you're still not bad enough to get a top three pick. So I just, like, they can't even lose right. And John Paxson, Gar Forman's been there, you're right, about a decade. But remember, John Paxson has been in that front office. We go back to the mid-2000s. Yeah. We're talking like Lou Aldang and the Ben Gordon era, and then he was there when they got Joakim Noah and Derrick Rose. So this is the third time that Paxson and company have had a chance to rebuild this basketball team, which hasn't been to the NBA Finals since 1998.
Is it part culture? Are they not paying attention to how the league has changed? Because you're seeing big teams. I think of the LA Clippers as a great example. They just go out and get the superstars. They go pay for the guys. This is a league now where it seems like free agency is almost a bigger deal than who you draft. Yet here we are again drafting complementary players to try and fit a system. Does it have to change the philosophy and the culture?
You brought up the 98 Bulls, and that's probably the most excited I've been for the Bulls in a while, right. The documentary from 1998, which is kind of sad. You just look at the attendance numbers and look at where the Bulls, the only way this is going to change if people stop going to games, because for years, even though the Bulls were sort of mired in mediocrity, they were still top two, top three in attendance. They have the largest arena in the NBA, but still, there are people in the seats. The 100 level is always filled. The 200 level is all your suites and all your sponsors. And then the 300 level are your Joes. I mean, the people that have jerseys and go to all these games. Look at the attendance numbers right now, though. I mean, they're looking at bottom half of the league in attendance. If they stop going, and by they, I mean the fans, if the fans stop going and the team isn't winning, I think that's the only way that we get lucky enough to bring in some new people that are holding the reins of this franchise, because right now they're pretty much in basketball hell. They're not good enough to win a title, and they're not bad enough to get better through the draft.
Yeah, so and frankly, an 8 seed's not going to cut it. Even if they somehow, you know, hopscotch the magic and get to the 8 seed this season, it's still not, they're not competitive.
And free agency, who's the last big free agent they got? Ben Wallace?
Carlos Boozer, come on.
Oh, yeah, right, that's right. Yeah, good call.
312-981.
My point exactly.
Exactly, right. 312-981-7200 is the phone number if you want to talk Bulls basketball. And we all do, because this is a basketball town. I do get angry at the fact that we all grew up with Michael Jordan and the Bulls, and they are the royalty. And there's a reason why the United Center is one of the top grossing venues in the NBA. It's because people bought all those tickets when Michael Jordan and the Bulls are winning. So it makes me angry that the Bulls are just not there right now. But we'll talk more about it. 312-981-7200. Sam Panionovich at the Corcoran's in the Vegas airport. We'll return here on 720 WGN. Stay with us. Standing by in the Vegas airport to talk about our annual conversation about the Chicago Bulls, because, of course, the NBA season doesn't necessarily kick off until after Christmas. It was tough, man, to watch those games on Christmas, Sam, without the Bulls on it. And I get it. It's been a couple of years. We don't have any reason to be in that games, any of those games. But as a Chicago Bulls fan, you do want that. You want that. You want them to be playing on Christmas.
You want them to be good. And, by the way, I forgot. I must have blacked out during this trade. I totally forgot. We were talking about all the bad moves that management has made going back to 2014 or whatever. Did you remember that they traded 2 first-round picks for Doug McDermott in 2014?
Oh,
remember that?
Man, yeah.
Holy cow. It doesn't get much worse. That's the cherry on top of a really bad-tasting sundae.
Mm. Also, I'll give them props. They also didn't they draft Jimmy Butler pretty late in the first round after the Derrick Rose season, just because it felt like that was anyone who was in the later part of the first round rarely ever makes it to superstar status, and here's Jimmy Butler being a superstar in the NBA.
But then they trade Jimmy Butler to Minnesota, and here's what really kills me when we talk about, you know, rebuilding and how long does a rebuild take. If you look at the Eastern Conference standings right now and look at the Chicago Bulls, where are they at? Oh, there they are, 13-22. Sweet. 17.5 games out of first place. Look who's on the 3 line. The Miami Heat, who are 25-9, with guess who running the show? Jimmy Butler. And if you look at their starting lineup, Justin, they are starting 3 guys under the age of 25 and 2 guys that are undrafted. And they are the 3 seed in the East right now, and they are playing damn good basketball. Their starting point guard, by the way, is Kendrick Nunn, who is a star at Simeon with Jabari Parker. They won 4 state titles. Kendrick Nunn is the point guard. Duncan Robinson went to Michigan. Nunn and Robinson were undrafted, and they are starting for the third-place Miami Heat with Jimmy Butler, which goes to show you that maybe the best player the Bulls have had in the last 5 years, they got rid of him, too, because they said they couldn't win with him. But lo and behold, Pat Riley has found a way in Miami.
Yeah. That's a tough pill to swallow for Bulls fans, because you're right. This is a league that is all about the superstar, and Jimmy Butler is one of those superstars. Whether you like him or not, or if he's a cancer in the clubhouse, whatever it is, he is a superstar, and he's proving it wherever he goes. And the Bulls gave up on him for essential reclamation projects in Zach LaVine and Chris Dunn.
Not the greatest trade in the world, and Chris Dunn hasn't gotten better, and Zach LaVine has never met a shot. Zach LaVine's like that guy on Bumble where he just swipes right every time. Like every time he touches the ball, he wants to shoot it. He's probably the best bumbler in the league. And Markkanen, I like Markkanen because he's a unicorn. He's a 7-footer that can step out and shoot it. But guys like that go in the top 10, man, it's very simple. You have to get better pretty much every single year, and you have to add something to your game. And I think the development here with the younger players, I think that's been the problem. It didn't happen with Chris Dunn. It hasn't happened with Lauri Markkanen. And Wendell Carter is a very serviceable player. He's good for about 13 points and 9 rebounds a night. But, again, these guys were drafted, all of them pretty much 7th overall. They have to be better, and they have to get better over time. And that's really the issue.
Okay, so when I think about the Chicago Bulls, and Lauri Markkanen's a great example, the other night when they got a win, and this kind of gets us to the conversation about Jim Boylan as a coach. The coach has really kind of doubled down on this idea that we're going to work hard in practice. We're going back to this again. We're practice, all this kind of stuff. But he had a quote, Jim Boylan, I got to find it, but a quote after Lauri Markkanen finally had a good game. He put 25 up or something in one of the wins they had over the Christmas break. And he essentially says, yeah, well, Markkanen is finally starting to figure out how he fits into our system, and he's taking what we're coaching, and he's finally doing what we're telling him to do. I've never heard a coach say that about any other star in the NBA. You're never going to hear Eric Spoelstra talk about Jimmy Butler that way. You're never going to talk about even Joel Embiid. You're not going to hear from Kawhi Leonard. It just seems like this is a team that cares more about their system and how what they're doing to coach to find victory than the individual that's on the court.
I'm so perplexed at this guy. And it's funny because if you go back to when Jim Boylan was a head coach in college, and I tip my cap to my buddy Jonathan Hood up the dial, he went back and found a bunch of old audio of Jim Boylan when he was the head coach, I believe, at University of Utah. And he is screaming at reporters, and he is, like, pushing players. And now all of a sudden, it's like he had a lobotomy, and he, like, doesn't know, like, I don't understand, like, how does a man that old have such a personality change at this point in the game, and you lose a 30-point lead, and he's like, well, I thought we played well. I thought we fought. Like, he used to be this, guns blazing, disciplinarian guy, and now he's, patting everybody on the behind. And it makes no sense. But then again, none of this makes sense. You have a team that's 13-22 that started to rebuild 3 years ago, and you've been overlapped by the Magic and the Nets, the Sixers and the Raptors. So it is what it is. We're the old lady in the passing lane driving 55, and everybody's flying 75 right around us.
Yeah, we had B.J. Armstrong on too long ago, and he was talking about the European players, and he was talking about Lauri Markkanen and others, that they become more – they come here more pro ready. Even if they go through the college system, they're more. They just play. They understand the game more. You see the super success of Luka Doncic. You see the success of the kid in Denver, and others where these European players are coming in, and the systems revolve around them. They're just like you said. They're tall. They can step back. They can shoot. They can drive the lane. They seem to be much more evolved. Why is it in the case in Chicago that we have a player like that in Markkanen who has to fit into a system and is finding himself regressing in a more coach system as opposed to a system that's around his strengths?
The best players are the ones the system should revolve around. When you have LeBron James, you find a way to build the system around him. You don't make a system that LeBron maybe can fit in. You have to calibrate your offense in basketball to your strengths. And Lauri Markkanen needs to be a more focal point of this offense. But they are just it's almost like they're so stubborn in their ways, and they're just like inadmissible of admitting guilt that they just got some things wrong. And it's almost like the Bears with Trubisky, not to cross sports here, but the reason they keep saying Mitch is our guy is because if Mitch is not the guy, then all of a sudden Ryan Pace is out of a job. Of course he's going to keep Mitch out of the helm, because if Mitch is gone, he's gone. So you get tied into the players that you draft and the players mm-hmm. that you acquire. But I'm totally with you, man. When the Mavericks got Dirk Nowitzki, they didn't run like low pounding ground in the block. Like, they found a way to move Dirk out to the perimeter, and he worked on his fadeaway, and they built the team around Dirk. You build the team around your best players. And right now, I don't know what they're doing. I mean, I sound like a broken record, but I'm just very, very confused.
They've shown spurts, and they put up 130 points not too long ago. There are some offensive gems in the last month with the Chicago Bulls. They can't play defense and they can't hold a lead. That's something that, and that's weird, because I thought that's what Jim Boylan was all about. What kind of system are we running? Because when I look at the old conversations we had, it was all about what kind of spatial system that Fred Hoiberg wanted to emulate what they were doing in Golden State. What are the Bulls running right now that is, at least as an NBA fan, we would understand?
So Basketball Reference did a good job of listing this stat. If you go to the Bulls reference page, it's on one of the columns. It's called Pace. And what Pace is the speed that you play your game. How fast are you going up and down the floor? How many shots do you give up and take? When the Bulls had Tom Thibodeau as the head coach, they were looking at a pace of about 90. And ever since they got rid of Thibodeau, we're talking 92, 95, 95, and then with the last 3 years, 98, 99, and 100. So they've been playing faster, and that's what you bring in guys like Kobe White for. That's why you draft a guy like that. They want to get up and down the floor and take more shots and get more shots up. The problem is they don't know what a good shooter is, so they don't have guys making jump shots. And then when everybody wants to just shoot jump shots to play offense, oh, by the way, we forget to get back on defense. So they're playing faster, but they're forgetting the most important principle of basketball. When you want to run and shoot and play fast, you have to work even harder to get back and stop the other team. They don't do that. So they're playing fast and taking more shots, but they don't have enough guys that can make shots, and then they don't get back. Maybe I should coach the Bulls. I feel like I haven't figured out. Is it this simple? I don't know.
I wish you would, just so I could do an annual segment ripping on you.
I would give you full access. I'd let you in the shower. You can do whatever you want. I promise.
Sam Panionovich with me here. You got time for one more segment?
We've
got to take a quick break here, and we'll come back. And I want to talk about something Jabari Parker said when he came back in the town. He's playing for the Hawks now, but he came back in the town, and he talked to Bulls reporters, beat reporters, and he said some very interesting things about the organization. We'll talk to Sam about that coming up here right after the break here on 720 WGN. Sam Panionovich is with us. He former WGN radio sports analyst and reporter, and he is joining us from the Las Vegas airport for our annual conversation about Chicago Bulls basketball and the NBA, hardwood. Sam, the Jabari Parker, I teased this right before the break, Jabari Parker, of course, the star at Simeon who went to Duke and had a spell with the Bulls last year, and it didn't work out, unfortunately, for all of us. He told reporters when he came back with the Hawks that the Bulls are not a destination for Chicago players, for people who grew up here and played here. They're not a destination. Why is that? Why wouldn't the Bulls be a place for Chicago players?
Well, there have been a lot of players over the years that have looked back to the dismantling of the 98 team when they had Jordan and Pippen and Kukoc, and they had a very affable team with likable guys, and management sort of sided with Jerry Krause over Phil Jackson, and then Phil left, and when Phil left, Michael left, and when Michael left, everybody left. But, I mean, Jordan has never, you know, minced words about this. Jordan was not happy with the way things ended here. And if the best player that ever lived didn't like his exit out of Chicago, I think every superstar after him sort of paid attention to that. And I'll tell you what, one of the really telling points, and one of the headlines that I sent you over the conversations we've had over the last handful of years was when Dwayne Wade signed. And I told you at the time, I said, I have no idea why they're doing this. It makes no sense because they're not good enough to win a title, and Dwayne Wade eventually is going to want out. Look at how Dwayne Wade was jettisoned out of town and some of the things that he had to say about the way things were ran here. And Wade and Jimmy sort of turned on management, and then management traded Jimmy and got rid of Wade. So you look around and you see Michael Jordan, Jimmy Butler, Dwayne Wade. Look at how they handled Luol Deng.
Derrick Rose.
At how they handled Derrick Rose. I mean, this is not – you don't get the benefit of a doubt anymore when you have gone out of your way to really push your heart and soul of many teams just out the door and think you can just move on. I mean, players are aware. Players talk, they text, they hang out in the summer, they ride banana boats and drink wine. They know what's going on, man. And there's a reason LeBron, Carmelo, I had to laugh because somebody told me that Anthony Davis was going to come to Chicago and I almost fell out of my rocker. They don't care because they know how things are handled there, and reputation is everything with an organization.
Parker even went as far as to say he would propose an all Chicago NBA team, and that would be a great team. I mean, because all the guys want to play together. That's, I mean, as a Chicagoan, I would love that. I don't know, it can't be the Bulls, obviously, because they don't see eye to eye, but man, oh man, there's so much great Chicago talent that it might be old at this point, but Anthony Davis included, that would just make it so exciting.
Yeah, that would be awesome. There have been a lot of good players in Chicago over the years. I think the high school basketball in Chicago is second to none. But it's also funny because Jabari Parker, I remember covering one of the camps when he showed up 30 pounds overweight, said he wasn't going to play any defense. So every situation is different, and I'm getting multiple looks from the airport from people like, is this guy still talking about the Bulls? Go away. It's just, you know, it's a mess. And it's funny, my buddy Jeff, who's a diehard GM listener, he texted me during your break, and I think he summed it up perfectly. He said, it's easy. They just suck, period. Yeah. And that's how a lot, unfortunately, we joke, that's how a lot of the fans feel. And here's the true telling. I had a pair of section, like 111 tickets, row 5. I couldn't give them away last month. Hmm. I said, hey, I got floor seats pretty much for the Bulls. You want to go? Nope. Hell no. Nope, 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 nope. When people don't even want to get 300-level tickets and watch your product, that is a problem.
Yeah. Well, as the NBA evolves, and we saw the passing of David Stern this week, the numbers are unbelievable. I mean, it has so much to do with Michael Jordan and the fact that when he took over and when he left and how the NBA has changed. How do you see the NBA this season? I mean, is it good that there's so much power on the West Coast in L.A., that it's the Clippers and the Lakers? Is that good for the NBA?
I think it's good because we have more parity than we've had in a really long time. I can make a case that maybe 6 or 7 teams to win the championship, and this is on the heels of an era where we knew it was either going to be Golden State or Cleveland or Miami. So I think the fact that you have maybe 5 teams in the West and maybe 3 teams in the East that could win a championship, I think that makes the postseason more exciting. But at the end of the day, we're probably going to have one of the L.A. teams, Clippers or Lakers, and probably have the Heat or the Sixers, or I'm sorry, the Bucks or the Sixers. But I just think you have more spread out talent as opposed to all the players going to 2 or 3 teams. So I think the parity in the league is better. And I'm excited actually for the postseason because I actually have to watch it in April and May now. In years past, I had to just turn it on in June and it'd be Warriors and Celtics or Warriors and Cavs or Warriors and Heat. So you kind of knew the way it was going to go, Now I think it's wide open.
What do you think? I mean, it's in our listening area. The Milwaukee Bucks are 31-5, which is unbelievable to think about that they've only lost 5 times. They're on a trajectory that's similar to the 96-97 Bulls. What do you think? Are they the real deal? Are the Milwaukee Bucks a prime contender to win the NBA championship?
Yeah, they're the favorite right now to win the NBA Eastern Conference. I think they're the third team in Vegas right now to win the title. It goes Lakers, Clippers, and then Bucks. If you're not a basketball fan and you don't pay attention to that kid, the Greek Freak in Milwaukee, he is about 6'11". He can jump from the free throw line and dunk. He can dribble between his legs. He was a guy who was really smaller when he was a kid, so he was a guard growing up, and he sort of blossomed into this utility knife. He is the best player in the league, and if he gets a jump shot, like a 3-point shot, he will be the best player by a long margin. He's very special. He was the MVP last year. He's the best player in the league this year. And they're very well coached. They have a lot of depth. And guess what, Justin? They play defense, unlike that team on the west side of Chicago. So it's crazy what happens when you play a little defense.
What have you heard about this documentary, the 10-part? Because we've all seen the trailer at this point. Is it going to be about the unraveling of the team? Is it going to be all about the drama that was at the end there with Phil Jackson and Jerry Krause? Or is it going to be about Michael Jordan and the highlights that we remember?
I think somebody just got engaged in the airport. Why would you ever get engaged in an airport? I don't know why that. I don't know why that.
It is. It is the Vegas airport. So,
no comment. I've heard that it's start to finish the last year because when Phil Jackson got the team together going into that 97-98 season, he handed them all a booklet, and as he always did every year, Phil always gave the team reading in the off season, and he gave them a book or a binder going into that season, and the binder said "The Last Dance." So they knew that this was the last year, and they knew that they had the ability to rattle off a second three-peat, win a championship for the sixth time in 8 years, and then go their separate ways. So I think it's just a chronicalization of a team that knew that they were about to be blown up, that still came to work every single day, still did their job, and still found a way to win the championship again. And it's just a, it's a pretty much a juxtaposition of that whole entire season, the ups and the downs, the drama, the fights in the locker room, the spats between Krause and Phil Jackson and management. So I'm really excited. I mean, that was such a dramatic year. Cheryl Ray Saad, a very good friend of ours, told me that was one of the toughest teams to cover. Even though they won the championship, there were so many angles of drama from every different direction. Right. I think you're going to see a lot of that, and you're going to see a lot of footage and a lot of practice footage that has never been seen before.
Wow. You know, it's an interesting story, because I was just talking about this because I saw the trailer with my family at Christmas time, and you just wonder, obviously we have such affinity for that team and for Michael Jordan and everything here in Chicago, and he can do no wrong, and everything is the best sport, not just basketball, just sport in general. This was the best team. Does the whole nation, do basketball fans around the world, do they see it that way? Do they see the Chicago Bulls team, especially the second half, as the most enigmatic or the best team in basketball history?
I think that the people that grew up watching basketball in the 90s, I think they sort of blend that whole era together, not the first three-peat against the second three-peat, but I know, and you brought up David Stern's passing a little earlier, when he allowed the NBA players to go to the Olympics again in 92, that changed the game. That took it from the national game to a worldwide game. And who was the best player on that team? It was Michael Jordan, who wore 9 for the 92 Dream Team. That changed the game. That made guys like Luka Doncic and Dirk Nowitzki, it made them pick up basketballs instead of soccer balls. So that team just changed the way that everything came together on a global level. And when you have the best player in the world playing for your city in Chicago, and he's the best player in the world, you put the dots together, it's pretty easy.
Yeah. You got Oprah at the United Center, and Gene Siskel, and everybody getting up and slapping their hands together. That's great. All right, so my last question, back to the Bulls to wrap up here. Well, is it just is it just winning? Can they, if they put together a 10-game winning streak, are the seats filled again? Are people back on the Bulls bandwagon? Is it that simple?
I don't think so, because even if they win 10 games in a row, guess what? They're 23-22. So now we're a game over 500. Woohoo! You need to win when it matters, and you need to get into the postseason and win a playoff series. I was trying to figure out top of my head last time they won a playoff series. I believe it was the 2014-2015 season when they lost to the Cleveland Cavaliers. They had taken a 2-1 series lead. Rose hit a three off the backboard. They won that game, but then they got swept the final three. You have to be a playoff contender. Fans aren't stupid. It's why White Sox fans don't go until that team is good. Bulls fans, they're not going to go until this team is actually playing better, getting better, and winning meaningful games in March and April and beyond.
Well, hopefully we can have this conversation again before Christmas next year, because it seems like the only time we ever talk about the Bulls is right around Christmas, where we complain about how the rebuild's not going well. Sam Panionovich is a sports analyst and reporter, and of course former WGN radio guy, and he joins us once a year at least to talk Bulls basketball. Get home safe, Sam.
I'll see you on the softball diamond, buddy. Take care.